Let's freaking go. Brian Kelly is in a really good spot for the future of LSU football recruiting. I couldn't believe what I saw earlier today about the 2027 recruiting class. Now, we talked on Sunday night quite a bit about the 2027 quarterback class, but did you know that the state of Louisiana has 9 top 100 on 3 industry recruits in the state of Louisiana? Now, that is probably going to change. It more than likely will lower. It is still very early in the process, but 9 is an extremely high number. I want to show you some of the research we were able to do a little bit earlier today. Bang. Take a look at this. This is the amount of top 100 recruits in every single recruiting class dating back to 2004. And as you can see, this number is normally around 4. Some years, 5. You see that legendary Leonard Fournette class with Speedy Noil. 8 top 100 recruits in the state of Louisiana. In 2022, there were 10. Yes, that's the Emory Jones, Walker Howard, Will Campbell recruiting class. And then, of course, you can go all the way back to 2004, those early Doucette recruiting classes, loaded teams. Only 4 top 100 recruits. For 2027, there are 9. But also take a look at 2026. There are 5 top 100 Louisiana recruits, and there's plenty of other players who are just outside the top 100. So when you average all of this together, what do you get? An average of 4.3 top 100 recruits in the state of Louisiana every year. You have 10 in 2022, but you have 9 in 2027 and 5 in 2026. Now, some of them have already committed to other schools. Some of them play the same position. That doesn't mean you're going to land every one of them. That also doesn't guarantee the amount of success that you are going to have. But since Brian Kelly has been at LSU, I want you to see this data yet again. He has had a fertile, moist state of Louisiana to work with. In fact, the recruiting services have gotten smarter. Remember how many Louisiana 3-star recruits would turn out to be very successful? But take a look now. They're doing a better job of rating Louisiana kids higher than they ever have before. 10, 5, 3, 3, 5, 9. That is the most top 100 Louisiana recruits over a 6-year stretch ever. So, does that mean that the Louisiana high school football player has become a better player? Probably not. It's just the services sharpening up. But the data has always shown if you have more top 100 recruits, you are more than likely going to be in the running to win a national championship. And that is really, really, really good news if you are an LSU Tiger fan. If you hit them, okay? So you have to close the deal. This obviously is a different era. This is the NIL era. This is the transfer portal era. So it's not quite as important to land those players, all right? It's not as important to land each and every one of them because they can always come back. They can always come back to your school, even if they go elsewhere at first. But the truth is, LSU is in a really good spot. They're in a really, really, really good spot. And I'll show you some of these 2027 players. Okay, some of you aren't familiar with most of these kids. And by some of you, that includes myself. It's a little too early for me to be talking about high school juniors specifically. But I do like to talk about them as a whole, right? And there are 2 quarterbacks in this top 100, so you're not going to land both of them more than likely. And there's actually a third in Malachi Ziegler out of Benton, Louisiana. But you see, there's quite a few of these guys, like a Jaden Miles, if you will, 6'2", 200 pounds. That's a guy that you would like to get, right? Peyton Houston is a quarterback that I like a lot that we talked about over the weekend. Ahmad Hudson. And then you can go all the way down. Jaden Anding, whose older brother was a part of the last recruiting class at LSU. Aiden Anding. Okay, so things do set up nicely for LSU. So you have a more organized NIL. You still have the genetic advantage of being the only Power 5 school in your own state. That is all wonderful. But can you find a way to get most of those kids on your team? The good news is for the 2025 class, you are in a really good spot because you've already landed four of the five top 100 recruits. Obviously, blame Bradford, the five-star safety who decided to go elsewhere. He, of course, is not a part of this class. He is at Ohio State. Now, I do think this is relevant. I'll only bring it up briefly. This was the biggest LSU sports news story of the day. Sydney Berzon, their best pitcher for the LSU softball team, has decided to hit the transfer portal. I thought that was very interesting. I had heard after my live stream on Sunday that there was going to be some shocking portal leaves, or at least shocking on the surface. Apparently, this was not that shocking to people who really follow LSU softball, which is very interesting, okay? Let's go to Mello. We say hi to Tony the Tiger, J-Red, Tyler, and so on and so on. Coming up here in just a moment, Mr. Matthew Broon of On3 will join us, and he is going to break down the offseason that Kim Mulkey has had up to this point. Now, one thing I do want to include before we continue, okay? I do not feel great. I have a sore throat, mucus, all that stuff. My wife was very sick last week, and now I feel it coming. You know, it's one of those things, as you get older, you can kind of know when you're about to get sick. So we might not go live tomorrow. We might not go too long tonight, but we do have a guest coming up. So if you hear my voice, it's a little bit different, or if you hear a little, that's the reason. And that wasn't a real one, okay? So it is what it is. Next thing, I do want to chat about the big changes that are coming to college football. And there is one story. There's actually two, but there is one that just broke today that has a huge impact on LSU's current roster. Huge. But I want to go to the bigger one, which is right now the NCAA, and more so the conferences, are trying to reel in NIL and all of that. And basically, what the SEC and the Big Ten are doing right now is they're trying to have a universal way of doing NIL and so on and so on. A salary cap, if you will, which would go against the own schools in the conference's state laws. So, in particular, Tennessee and Vanderbilt in the state of Tennessee, there's a lot going on with that. I just want it to be known that as much as I have pushed back against the SEC and what all they have done wrong here, I would say it would be nice if we can have a uniform set of rules. It would be very, very, very nice. But I don't really find that interesting because I do think this will be drawn out. What I find to be really fascinating is another story involving the Tennessee Volunteers, and it's actually a basketball story that could come into football, all right? Now, let me pull up a fancy schmancy graphic here just to show you that this indeed did happen. There is a basketball player for the Tennessee Volunteers. Now, why are the Tennessee Volunteers always in the middle of all of this? I don't know. But Zakai Ziegler, number 5, superstar point guard for Tennessee, has played 4 years of college basketball. He has played those 4 years of college basketball in 4 years. So he is suing to have his 5th year of eligibility, saying that it's unfair that there is a redshirt rule. And with this redshirt rule, why should I be penalized in my 5th year, my prime athletic year when it comes to being a college athlete? Why am I being penalized for not redshirting? Y'all, we cannot have college sports allowing a 5th year of eligibility. We just cannot have it. I'm sorry. That is not what college sports has been. It's not what it ever should be. But what I would tell you is, even with an extra year of eligibility, Ziegler says he would earn an extra $2 to $4 million if he were to win this. The truth is still the same. You do not want athletes getting a 5th year of eligibility. That is not what college sports are. But even though I don't like a rule, if you are an LSU football fan and you do believe that the 2027 LSU Tiger football team can be something, you are cheering for Ziegler, and this is why. LSU has a large number of players that they have brought in this last transfer portal cycle that has played 3 years of college football in 3 years. Meaning, they have 2 years of eligibility left to only play 1 year of college football. So what does that mean? Well, let's just say LSU is playing this year and we don't start off with a good season. We're 4 games in. One of these players could say, look, I quit. I want to have another year of eligibility. Now, really think about that. How much LSU would be helped by that? Now, who are some of these players? Well, one is A.J. Halsey, who you just brought in. He has played 3 years of college football in 3 years, did not redshirt. Another is Mansoor Delane. He has played 3 years of college football in 3 years. Now, he is a top 100 NFL draft prospect, so he's probably going to the league, but still. And then a guy that I am very sympathetic towards is Jack Pyburn, who in his freshman season almost exclusively played special teams for Florida. Now, Jack Pyburn, I think, will get drafted next year, but imagine if you can have all three of those guys for a 5th year. You know another one? Berrien Brown. Now, Berrien Brown, even if he did get a 5th year, he would probably make that leap to the NFL as well. But that's huge, in particular for this current LSU roster. So, if Ziegler wins this case, this would be bigger than the Diego Pavia win, because the Pavia win has to deal with JUCOs and all of that. If you could stretch out your college eligibility to play 5 years of college football in 5, it changes the entire sport. It changes the entire sport. Because at this level, you cannot get quote unquote washed up playing college football. You can't. Now, you might not be the same player after a serious injury, but there is no age cliff in college football. Basically meaning the older you are, the bigger the advantage you have. You don't fade out of your prime. You don't have to worry about what Travis Kelce has to worry about next year, Stephon Diggs has to worry about next year. Are they still, can they finagle around being older for their positions? A fifth year of college football is not a good thing, though. Okay? I don't like the redshirt rule as it is. I really don't. But, you know, I just don't know. I just don't know at this point. And you guys know, I sometimes to a fault, this has cost me viewers, this has cost me a lot, but just being brutally honest about things, I would be pissed off if they did that. But I'm also pissed off that we're going to a 16-team playoff. I'm very pissed off about that. But I love LSU so much. I love this community so much. And I still love college football. I just don't like the decision makers. I don't like the powers that be. I don't like any of it at this juncture. I just don't. But dear Lord, a fifth year is too much. Now, to LA Mom's point, she is thankful for the fifth year of eligibility for Nuss. I am fine with the way things are, to be clear, okay? I am fine with redshirting and the 4 year or the 4 game and under redshirt. I'm fine with it. There are a few things I would change about it. But, you know, as far as Garrett is concerned, he did redshirt his first season, and thank God he did. That is definitely one take I was totally wrong about. And guess what? You miss on a lot of things. When he decided to sit out of the bowl game and save this year of eligibility. So, let's go to Jared. If JD5 wanted it next year, I'd been okay with it. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because he did get an extra year. He did get that extra year of eligibility because of the COVID year, right? So he was he started 4 years of college football, but he got that fifth because of the COVID year. But in that COVID year, they played 4 games in the Pac-12? So there you go. Let's go to Drunk. T-Bob got poached by Chicago. He couldn't say no to the NIL money. I've been asked a few times about T-Bob's salary at Barstool. I do not know. It's definitely more than what I'm making. Next thing. You know, there are so many of these college football quarterback lists. All right. And almost all of these lists have Garrett Nussmeier as a top 10 quarterback in all of college football. One thing I found to be interesting today is, look, I consider myself a good film study analyst. I wouldn't say I am elite. There's this guy by the name of JT O'Sullivan of QB School. He's elite. He's really good. All right. And he just randomly tweeted out. He said, the first half of the Baylor game that Garrett Nussmeier played, he called incredible. And he is a very honest and I wouldn't say pessimistic, but he's not as sunshine pumpy as former NFL quarterbacks who do this, right? So many former players are afraid to be critical. And I agreed with that. I mean, the Baylor game, yes, it was a very opt-in-out weird game, But Garrett really was phenomenal with a brand new offensive line basically in front of him. Here's the thing, though, that is very fascinating about Garrett and why I am rooting for him, even if I weren't an LSU fan. So growing up, you know, I am big at this age of my life, and I don't know why I've gotten into this mindset. It's stupid that I even am considering this, but I want to get my athleticism back. Like, I am really training as hard as I possibly can. Samuel, who's a big-time PHLer, he's been helping me a lot. He does a lot of fitness stuff off to the side. I can hook you up with them. And, you know, you can get trained by someone who does this. And he's done some one-on-one stuff with me. And I am trying my best to get back to where I was as a four-sport athlete growing up. And it's hard. I couldn't run. I couldn't jump. I couldn't throw. I had no athleticism, but I was able to play all four of the sports. I wasn't elite at any of them. But I say all of that because I root for the non-athletic marvels to succeed. I do. I root for Garrett Nussmeier, who is indeed a pocket quarterback. Now, he's not a Ryan Mallett statue, but he also doesn't have Ryan Mallett's size. He doesn't have a Jamarcus Russell level arm or anything like that. But Garrett is a great processor. He plays the game how, if I were a quarterback, I would have to play the game. I can't run. Now, the difference is most of these quarterbacks that you see on all these top 10 lists, Garrett is the only one who can't run. He's the only one. Go look at any top 10 lists. It's all quarterbacks who have juice with their legs. And that sounds very suspect. There are some who are beyond elite at it, like Lenore Sellers. He is touching on Jaden Daniels' level as a runner. He is that good of a runner. And then you have very, very, very good runners like John Mateer, who we talked about quite a bit on here. And then you have guys that are probably a little bit below that, like a Sam Levitt. And then a guy who's probably a rung below that is Arch Manning. All those guys can run some, all right? So I will be honest that a big reason why I cheer for Garrett is the same reason I, in many ways, cheer for short quarterbacks in the NFL. That's why I love Drew Brees so much. He had to know every last little detail about the game of football for him to be successful. So here's the big thing with Garrett. There were so many opportunities where he had chances to run. And it's not a matter of him being a spectacular runner or anything like that. It's just taking the yards that are given to you. Because it helps out your protection, and it changes the way defenses have to play coverage against you. Now, some of this is me being radicalized on my Power Hour SEC channel, doing film studies on quarterbacks who mostly only run. Lenore Sellers and Marcel Reed being two of those guys. And John Mateer is a better runner than he is thrower. So, you know, we're going to keep hammering this point. You don't have to be anything special as a runner. But if you go back to the best thrower of the football I've ever seen play college football, which is Joe Burrow, the close games, the games that were tight, the games that were in the balance, was ultimately decided by Joe Burrow's running ability. Clemson game, check. Big, big, big game. Alabama game, check. Auburn game in particular, check. I will say this about Garrett Nussmeier that makes himself really special is his pressure to sack ratio is so damn low, which is really good. He just does not take sacks. Now, some of that, he needs to take more of them instead of throwing the football into harm's way. It is what it is. Now, coming up after this break, we check in on the person who covers LSU women's basketball at a higher level than anyone else. But he also talks football. We did a deep dive to start about the On3 rankings that came out today. We'll talk about all of that coming up in just a second with Mr. Matthew Bruin, okay? Let's go. Are you a diehard LSU fan? And would you like to understand the complex game of football better? Well, sign up today for our PHL Patreon. This is his second touchdown, counter GY, you're pulling the guard. We dive deep on recruiting and the transfer portal at a level that you have never seen before. Film breakdowns from so many different angles, and my personal favorites, oh yeah, the analytics, baby. I like to get nerdy. We take a look at cutting-edge statistics that help all of us understand LSU football even better. And guess what? Every new sign-up gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail for free. But we got to save the best for last. Our private Discord community of LSU fans from around the globe. Sign up today. Patreon.com/LSU football and put your name on our wall of patrons. Special thanks to everybody who's on here. Let's freaking go.
Let's go.
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I gotta show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth experience serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. All righty, Mr. Matthew Bruin, your thoughts when you look at the brand new 2025 LSU women's basketball roster is what?
What's up, Carter? The new roster, obviously plenty of turnover here. I know that was an emphasis coming off of last year, was just talking to the staff and knowing Kim Mulkey, back-to-back Elite Eight finishes isn't quite, you know, where they want to be. They want to be in the Final Four. They want to be in the national championship. So coming off last year, it was definitely an emphasis to, I think, get bigger and obviously add more talent overall. They have the number one recruiting class in the country coming in with five freshmen, four of them top 30 players. And then they went to the portal and they added Mylaysia Fulwiley, Amaya Joyner, and Kate Koval. And so with that infusion paired with Flage and Michaela, I think they have a lot more, I don't want to say they have a lot more variety now, but when you replace an Anissa Morrow with Fulwiley, obviously it's different positions, it's different ways you can attack, and I think they could play a little faster this year. So the hope is to get them out in transition a little bit more, get Flage and Michaela easier looks at times. The offense kind of bogged down a little bit, but overall I think this is setting up to be, especially with Koval at the five, I think a more Kim Mulkey team that can play faster and then is just a little bit more physical than what last year's team was.
Yeah, I'll be honest, Matthew. It's so hard because you become so attached to a team, right? But like, yeah, it's going to be so hard for LSU fans to see last year Poa on, like, she was still eligible to play. She's playing somewhere else. But in your mind, this was a gutting of the roster.
Samaya Smith as well. I mean, as much as we like Samaya, and she had great moments. I mean, she ended last year averaging 6 points a game. And I think, you know, even at six, like, you look at just the front court, Anissa Morrow is obviously great. Like, there's no contesting that. But it's like you go 6'1 and 6'2 was your front court. It just wasn't big enough, really, in a lot of ways. And so Kate Colville, at the very least, gives you 6'5 in the middle, and she was the number five player in the country in the 2024 class. Someone that LSU really, really wanted in that class. She ended up going to Notre Dame for a year. So at the very least, you start there. Amaya Joyner, who was first team all AAC player at East Carolina, is about 6'2, 6'3, very physical as well. And then Grace Knox, who's 6'2, a five-star freshman coming in. So you get bigger right away. We'll see if there's anybody else they add to the roster. I'm not 100% sure right now either way. I think they're looking potentially at maybe adding another big, but we'll see if that ends up coming to fruition. But at the moment, the roster they have right now, you just feel like better with their front court and overall how they pair with Flage and Michaela.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth because when Malaysia Fulwiley was rumored to go to LSU, you know, this might be, you're an NBA aficionado, but Fulwiley reminds me a lot of White Chocolate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the exciting plays, you see him, they go viral, but how good of a player is she? And White Chocolate was a good player, but he wasn't like, you know, all-time elite John Stockton, Gary Payton level point guard. Do you think that could be the case here? Or do you think Fulwiley could be a starting point guard? Because, I mean, I know she's won an Addy, but you want a starter, per se. Yeah. Do you think she could take that next step with Kim?
Yeah, so I understood everyone's trepidation with it initially when it was rumored, because you do have Flage and Michaela. And the past 2 years have been trying to figure out what works with, obviously, the ball-dominant guards of Flage and Michaela. Like, what point guard works with that? They had Haley. It didn't work. Then they had Cheyenne Day Wilson, who kind of just didn't really do anything at a high level, and it didn't work. So they had some like Kalen Gilbert minutes out there and different players playing the one. I think for Kim Mulkey, this addition does one thing at a very, very high level, and it makes them probably the fastest team in the country and opens up transition on a whole nother level. Like, when you have a player like Malaysia, who, I mean, in the open court, you could just go Google her highlights, and it's just like unbelievable stuff, finishing at the rim and creativity with the ball and everything, and just the pace she plays with. And that's what Kim Mulkey wants. Like, that's where Kim Mulkey differs from like all the other older coaches. Let's say, like Vic Schaefer at Texas is the opposite in the spectrum. You know, even Dawn Staley pushes it, but she's not like forcing it. Like, Kim Mulkey just wants you to run in a lot of situations. And with Fulwiley, I think she does check that aspect of it. The question comes in the half court. Like, when you get bogged down, when you get in a slower pace, can she run an offense? You know, how does she operate whenever things aren't coming easy? And I think a big key for that will be her three-point shooting, where she'll have to get back to where she was as a freshman, where she was, I think, in the 30s percentage-wise. And not last year, I think she ended like 26, 27%. So a lot of it comes down to the shooting, I think, in the half court. But overall, I think, just from an offensive perspective, I'm excited to see what she can do.
But I mean, this next year, I mean, I know what the portal things could change, but I mean, they got to really push to hoist the trophy next year with Flage and Michaela here, right?
Yeah, like that's the urgency. Is you have Flage and Michaela now at their peak powers of, even 2 years ago, it was always, you know, Angel Reese that was kind of the one, and then maybe Anissa, and you know, Flage and Michaela were kind of ancillary pieces there as freshmen and sophomores. Now there's no more Anissa. Even with Fulwiley, like, she comes in as the clear number three to me. Koval's young. And then they have this awesome freshman class, which I think people are kind of overlooking. We can talk about it later, but like, this class will contribute as well, but it all comes back to Flage and Michaela. Like, you can't have those quarters, those halves where, like, you know, you don't show up, and that's going to be, it's imperative that they both play well for every game of the season, because that's kind of what's going to carry them. And if they do, they're both All-Americans. They're both like first team All-Americans potentially this coming year.
I don't know really anything about the McDonald's kids that are coming in. So How special are the incoming true freshmen?
Yeah, I think they – I mean, we've seen it kind of most years, if not every year. Even, like, Jada Richard showed flashes last year, and she was ranked in the 90s. Their freshman class is going to help a lot. Grace Knox, as a 6'2 forward, is going to come in and immediately play. I'm not saying she's going to start by any means, but she's going to come in and play significant minutes. Zakiah Johnson was awesome in the McDonald's All-American games, someone who could score, put the ball on the floor. And what I like about Zakiah, and then Divine Barrage, another five-star or high four-star player, however you want to look at it, they're both like 6 feet tall, can shoot it, can handle it. Like, they're not just getting 5'8 point guards or 5'8 guards. Like, these are 6'2 Grace Knox, 6 foot Johnson, 6 foot Barrage, and then Bella Hines is 5'8, 5'9, but she's an absolute scorer, an absolute bucket. So you look at that group, I'm anticipating Knox will play. I'm anticipating one of, if not both of Burge and Johnson, one or if not both will play there. So they're going to be in the rotation. It's a lot better situation than, you know, I think we talked about is, like, you know, the last tier POAs and the kind of picking up players from all around. Ideally, you want to be in the South Carolina, you know, model where you just filter in five-star after five-star after five-star coming in off the bench. And that's what I think Kim Mulkey is intent on doing now. And I think they can do that this year.
I just love the recruiting footprint. California, Iowa, Kentucky, New Mexico.
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible. Basketball is already just such a national thing. But when you get to these events, these AAU events, the Nikes, the Adidas, Under Armors, all this stuff, they're all in one centralized location. And you go to these events and there's hundreds of coaches just lined up everywhere. And so they're all seeing the same thing. So you're all, it's not like, you know, football maybe is obviously more regional. You know, coaches will go out to Shreveport, they'll go out to, you know, Lafayette or wherever to go. But it's like, it's such a condensed time period and condensed location where, like, everybody's seeing one player. It's like, oh, this is the top player in the country. And it's like, it's just kind of how it goes. Regionality matters a lot less in basketball. It still matters to a degree. I think, you know, you go to the Kansas or wherever, Iowa, you know, different states want to lock down their players. But it is definitely interesting to see it on the basketball side, where it's just, you know, go get the best players you can.
Yeah, I'm so excited about women's hoops. Like, I'm still buying so many, like, Anissa Morrow cards because I'm going to miss her so freaking much. Like, she's, like, my favorite LSU basketball player ever. I want to talk to you about the men's team. So for those that don't know, on three, you do everything. So you do football, you do some baseball, but basketball is your wheelhouse. And for you actually coach basketball, correct?
Yes, I do. AAU in Baton Rouge. I did 15U the last 2 years. I'm doing 16U this year.
Okay.
So yeah, so we've been going since March. We're wrapping up now.
So basketball evaluation is something I know you take very seriously. Your thoughts on what Mac McMahon has done to the men's roster going into next year?
Yeah, I think this is, they did everything that I wanted them to do. And I wasn't sure that they were going to be able to check off all these boxes. The late addition of Ron Zipper from Israel was a huge, huge pickup, because I wasn't sure they were going to be able to go get that two guard that had experience that they could really start there. But they did. I'm not even sure if he's on three, because he's from Israel. It's not a transfer portal one technically.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was a big one. But in general, DJ Thomas or Dadon Thomas is the top ranked player in this class in terms of transfers. He's the one that I'm looking forward to the most in terms of just a playmaker that they've wanted. They thought they had it with Jalen Cook, you know, a couple years ago from Tulane. That kind of unfolded where he played like half the season. It didn't really work out. But like, Thomas is a bigger, stronger version of Cook. Albeit he's not the 3-point shooter, but he is a guy who's ran UNLV's offense as a freshman and as a sophomore. And I think he deserves to be a top 25 player in the transfer portal. So that's where I kind of start. But just in general, not to go through everybody, but just in general, I think their front court can play with anybody now. Like physically, they're not small anymore. Last year, you know, Damian Collins was really skinny. Like Jalen Reed was hurt. Like Corey Chest was, I don't want to call him skinny, but he definitely wasn't bulky. Like now I think they have the bigs to like actually throw at people and not be overwhelmed, which is big in the SEC. That's like half the battle in the SEC when you look at like Florida and Auburn and these giant teams. So I feel good about the front court. Thomas at point guard is going to play a ton of minutes. And then I think they have enough shooting across the board now with a guy like Max McKinnon from Portland and Ron Zipper, like I said, from Israel and some other players. So I like the construction of the roster much better. I think the influx of NIL cannot be denied. I think that was absolutely huge for them to get that money and to be able to spend it.
Now, this is a question, Matthew, that everybody wants to know. And it's going to hurt me if you say no to this.
I'm scared.
I grew up going to John Brady's basketball camp. I just want to be in the damn tournament. That's all I want to be. I don't care if we're in the first four in and we got to go play in Hot Scotch, New Jersey. Can we make the damn dance?
Yes. LSU should make the tournament this year. LSU should make the tournament this year. We will be there. Carter, we will all be there. Wherever this is, I don't know where they're going to – even if it's, like you said, first four in Dayton, we will all be there. LSU will turn out because we're finally in the tournament. They should make the tournament with this team. Like, again, everything from NIL funding to the actual execution of this roster, which impressed me, Matt McMahon needs to make the tournament this year, which I've been saying even before they constructed this team. They need to make it. I think they will.
I think it's just kind of glossed over because the women's tournament happened at the same time. We're all focused on that. But y'all, 14 of the 16 teams made it. Okay.
Yeah.
It was us in South Carolina that did not make the tournament. We have not made the tournament in God knows how long. And if I saw that stupid freaking manager from Will Wade one more time, please, I would slap the damn garlic parmesan Buffalo Wild Wings out of his hands. I was so sick of it because I care so much. I freaking love. If Stromile Swift walked up to me and said, hey, give me your left arm, I wouldn't even ask. I would chop it off and say, here, Stromile, take it. That's how much I want this program to be great.
This is what LSU needs. And like you said, I think people kind of glossed over it. But then once you watch the tournament, when you're watching the first two rounds, and it wasn't even like a crazy tournament this year, but you're still like sitting there like, damn, like imagine like LSU hears, and they're even if, or just imagine like they win a game and then they make a second. Oh yeah. It's just a different feeling in the NCAA tournament where all eyes are on you and you're in the chaos. You're not just watching the chaos. You're actually living it and like breathing it for a minute and like supporting your team. And it is magical, but yes, it was painful for LSU fans not to be in it.
I see Sibley in here. Is it Brune or Brunee?
Brunee.
Oh, well, I've been saying Brune in from the last segment here, and you never corrected me.
That's all right.
I feel like shit now.
Dude, I don't.
I feel like absolute shit.
Shout out to the listener, though. That means they listen to my podcast over on the Bengal Tiger on 3 or something like that.
I feel like the bat that got hit by Manu Ginobili right now. Like that's how bad I feel. Cause I take it seriously. Brunee, I'm so sorry. Thank you so much for correcting me. But I'm excited. Freaking Ronald Dupree, number 12, mm-hmm. is back in that building. I mean, Matt, you cannot not make this damn tournament this next year. Please. Now, I'll be honest. Okay. You know more about basketball than I do. I will say, though, that as much as I want to believe that they are going to make it, I just think about it. Holy crap, the coaches in the SEC. It's just insane. Like, it is freaking insane how many legendary coaches, national championship winning coaches, even the ones that have not won natties, like Rick Barnes and Bruce Pearl.
Right.
And then we have Matt McMahon. I just don't think he can punch with the heavyweights, Matthew.
No, that is what he's gonna have to prove this year. And I think this is a 1 year deal here where if they go 4-14, I think he's gone. And that's it's over. So then you will have your answer. And then we will have our subsequent answer of, and this is what I was trying to tell people during the season. It's like, especially towards the end of it, it was like, look, they're going to, and Shay Dixon obviously came out initially with that, you know, report of like they were going to back McMahon, they're going to fund NIL, yada, yada, yada. Just because I think monetarily it makes more sense, you know, try to give him one more year, give him the funding instead of having to pay out all those coaches and then hire a whole new staff, whatnot. I think more than anything, them committing the however many millions of dollars it was, let's just say $6 to $8 million range, somewhere around there, that them allocating that money to basketball is the step. It doesn't matter who the coach is. Obviously, it will matter who the coach is if you can't get it done. But at this moment, it didn't matter. They needed to step up and say, no, we are going to compete with even the Mississippi schools, the A&Ms, the Alabamas, Auburn, so on and so forth. Like, you had to, and I always use Brian Kelly's verbiage when he was talking, when he was up there pleading for NIL in December, when he was saying we got to pay the ante to get a seat at the table. That's what you needed to do with basketball, and they finally paid the ante. So now we get to see, just like in football, you know, this is the result of that. In basketball, it's the same exact thing. We get to see what it looks like when he has a decent hand at the poker table.
If Scott Woodward is for some reason watching this, I've got my list of coaches that I want to swing for the fences. If you want to swing for the fences, I'm going to give you three names right now. Bruni.
Okay.
My favorite, best college basketball coach. This is my guy that would never say yes, and you shouldn't even approach him. But if you want to get wild, Rick Pitino. I would do anything for Rick Pitino, okay, who I think is the best college basketball coach I have ever seen personally. I know he's not. I know he's John Wooden, Coach K, all that stuff. But I would call Jay Wright. I look at you, Wink. Jay Wright is not answering your
call. I don't even know if Jay Wright's phone works anymore. He probably just sits at home.
But he's just out there. He's just existing. But this would be the guy. This would be the guy I think that would be feasible, knowing that in his personal life, he has connections to LSU. It would be Tony Bennett.
Okay.
Who's doing nothing right now.
Tony Bennett did.
His wife, I think, went to LSU. And one thing I would like about Tony, because you're an X's and O's guy, you love all of it, is that I don't think we're ever going to out-recruit Cal or Pope or anyone like that. So why not get a coach who does the opposite, who extracts the most out of lesser talent? Now, it's not a, you know, diss a Kyle Guy or Hunter or Ty Jerome or any of those guys, but
yeah,
I mean, you get my point.
I get what you're saying. Is if you can't compete, you have to outsmart them to a degree. You have to outsmart the other. I mean, it's kind of like, in football, you know, when you're out, you have to out scheme the other team. You can't do something that they've already prepared for. You want to make them prepare, you know, on a short week or something like that. You got to catch them. So yes, I do understand. I do see the Tony Bennett side of things in terms of like he would have a clear identity. There would be a player development. Like it would kind of be a Dabo Swinney type thing where like you're trying to just instill a culture.
Yes.
That would be interesting. I'm curious. I'm curious.
But I know it would just be some other mid-major coach, but I think about it all the time. I think about it all the time because I just don't believe it. I just think we're going to be in this spot next year and then everybody's going to be.
Oh, nobody believes it. I mean, probably. I don't even. I mean, a vast majority of basketball fans need to see this to see it to believe it. I don't completely blame them. I all I can do is present to you that this roster is significantly, I think, more capable of competing with the rest of the SEC. Now we have to go see them do it. And Dedan Thomas cost more than the entire team last year in terms of NIL. So just the ability to go get him, like alone, speaks to the fact that, all right, now our expectations can reasonably be raised to where we're making the NCAA tournament here if you're an LSU fan. Last year was, first of all, the SEC was the best conference of this century. And
so you believe that? You truly
yes. Yeah, I know people were looking. I think it was, 2004, the ACC in 2004, something like that. There have been a couple good ones, but, like, that's another thing I think that's working.
2004 AC. That would have been Chris Paul.
Yeah, there was it was a Wake Forest, Duke, North Carolina. But the ACC that year only had like 8 or 9 teams, I think. So it was kind of, obviously they were all good, but they were all
just, to your point, I agree with you. It was the best I've ever seen. Yeah.
The other thing I think that's working in LSU's favor is the fact that the SEC will take a small step back. It can't be the same as good as it was last year. I just don't believe they lost so many seniors and high level players. I mean, you go through Auburn, Florida, I mean, Sears, Broome, you know, go down the list of Clayton, like all these players, Wade Taylor from A&M. So I think there'll be a reasonable small step back from the SEC. And if LSU can take a step up, I mean, 2 years ago, they went 9-9 and that team wasn't any good in the SEC. So it's like, if you're an LSU, if you're like, we just get to 8-10, you're making the tournament and you're probably, I mean, 8-10 last year, Mississippi State got an 8 seed.
Yes.
Arkansas got a 10 seed. Now Georgia got a 9 seed. Like, if you're in that range, I think more than any, I think an 8-10 seed is very, very reasonable for this team.
Yeah, I'm probably the only LSU show that's like 53 minutes in and that didn't bring up baseball. But you obviously keep up with LSU baseball as well. Do you think it's a top 8 national seed no matter what happens on Friday?
I do think so. I've read – shout out to Hunt Palmer breaking it all down, man. I love reading his stuff. But I do think they have enough with RPI, and it is so convoluted and complicated where it is interesting. But yes, I do think they've done enough. And obviously, I think once you get in that spot, and this is what I do enjoy about the baseball setup just in general, is that there's always something to play for. And, you know, in basketball, it's like if you're, you know, a 1 seed or a 2 seed or a 3, like, you know, it is kind of nebulous. In football, you know, you're only not even more playing for the buys, but, you know, you're kind of playing for something. In baseball, I do enjoy top 16, host your regional, top 8, host super, so on and so forth. So I am interested to see how they approach, you know, the tournament. You know, years past, it's been kind of, just get out of there, just survive, and just don't hurt ourselves. But I do think LSU is fine regardless here, and it'll be interesting to see. I've seen, you know, the Coastal Carolina thrown out there. Obviously, that was before my time here, but
it's going to be brutal. Interesting. That was brutal.
Yeah. I was here. I just saw it.
Well, I will say, like, the Stony Brook one hurt me more, but go look up that one. That was just... But yeah, Coastal was tough. But the Chanticleers, man, you can't live with them, can't live without them. My next question for you is, we are one step closer to football season. Based on since the last time you're on the show, which was during the spring, what has stood out to you the most about this LSU roster after all these portal additions?
I feel like there's a lot of places I could go. I think the defensive line, I have hope for that they'll be better than I thought they were going to be with the additions of obviously the defensive ends, you know, Patrick Payne, Jack Pyburn, and so on. But I do think Sadir Mitchell was someone in the spring that had a better spring. I'm not saying he's going to be a game breaker. I'm not saying he's going to do anything crazy, but I do think he is someone that impressed me enough with his movement at that weight to where he's going to be able to eat blocks up on some key downs and at least not be a liability. I watched his Texas tape, which is tape is loose because he didn't play a ton, but like the snaps he did play at Texas, I was really underwhelmed by the overall like effort. I thought it was lethargic a lot of times. Maybe a change of scenery is exactly what he needed, because I thought he looked really spry in the spring. So if they can get something from him, and then Bernard Gooden we didn't see in the spring, but if they can get something from him, I feel a lot better about that room just in terms of depth and overall kind of variety there. So defensive line, I would say, is where I kind of start in terms of takeaways from the spring, but you know, I could go on about any position with this team.
Should it be Greg Popovich Airport in San Antonio?
They're trying for it. They're trying to make a move for it. I'm sure nobody outside of San Antonio or Texas has seen this, but yeah, they're trying to file a motion to name it after Pop. I would love it.
Would you blow up everything to get Giannis? Well, you wouldn't blow up everything, but would you?
Yeah, I mean, this is the conversation me and my dad have on a daily basis. He was initially saying go get Giannis, which I think there is something to it, because in today's NBA, it's so hard, obviously, to repeat or, you know, to have any sustained success, you know, with this CBA and everything. So like if you have a window, you kind of need to do it. So, and if you got Giannis alongside Wimby and whatnot, like that would be a championship core. Not saying it would win, but it would be very competitive immediately. I don't think I could do it, though. I don't think I could trade the second pick. And like, especially if it's second pick and Castle and like Vassell and like, if you're trading everybody for Giannis at 31 years old, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. If you were just trading like only, if you told me it was only the second pick for Giannis, I could probably do it. But it's just like, if everybody that has thrown out trades has just been like, all right, second pick, Vassell, like 14th pick, 28 first, like all these picks. I'm like, that's a lot. If Giannis was 28, yeah, I would do it. I would do it for anything in the world. But I don't know, yeah. 31, I know he's great. I love Giannis, but I don't know how much more he's got.
Who wins the NBA championship?
This is the hardest question here. I've actually been thinking about this. Because I think there is a path for every team playing to win it, like a realistic chance. I haven't looked at like odds or anything, but if you told me the Pacers won it, I wouldn't even be shocked. I think their offense is like that good right now. I think the Pacers could beat the Knicks, and like, you know, if they get the Timberwolves in the championship, they could win it. The Knicks are tough, man. They're so talented. They have so much talent, and Brunson's a closer. I'm avoiding the question because I can't. I'm going to go – I think it's one of the Western teams.
Okay.
I think it's one of the Western teams. It's going to be the winner of OKC, Minnesota. And as much as I like Oklahoma City, and, you know, 2 weeks ago one of my friends asked me and I said Oklahoma City, I think Minnesota is going to get it done. I think their defense is good enough, and I think Ant is ready. I think Julius Randle is the story with Minnesota.
Yes.
I never when they made that trade before the season, I thought it was over. I thought,
like, yeah, I was like, that's like trade.
It makes no sense. Nothing makes sense. And now Julius Randle is awesome again. So I'll go Minnesota.
Right. So I have a huge, and for me, it might not be because, and on three, you guys make bang, man. Y'all are buying rivals. Y'all are.
Don't say we. I don't know.
I find out about it
when everybody else found out about it. I was not plugged in there. And then we had a company meeting after that to get everybody filled in. But yes, it was a day.
Shannon Terry, I am up for sale if you want me to
I'll make my pitch.
Yeah, for you. But I will tell you, because I think it's my first time publicly saying this, I do have before we get to Sibley Super Chat here.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you said that, because I do have a huge Timberwolves future. Huge. it would take care of me. And I placed this back in March. I felt like I was a sharp, because I was like, I'm starting to see things happen. And part of it also was just Nas Reed, man. Like, yeah. Man, he's so talented. Like, he is such a
That Lakers series, it was a game four, I think it was, where he was awesome. Ant after the game was like, Nas Reed, man. That guy, he's incredible.
There's so many, like, just random SEC players. Like, Oklahoma has two Hogs, one Aggie. You have one Georgia Bulldog for the
That's my least favorite player ever, Jalen Williams from Arkansas. That's my least favorite.
Oh, yes, player. Because of the Charges. Absolutely. Well, it's actually my mother's favorite athlete on the planet. So she hates you now. Yes, because she absolutely, she's watching too. She's like, I hate this guy, because I have a connection to him. Someone in his family was my football coach. So yeah, you are hated by my mother.
Only because of the Chargers. She's a great guy. But yes, the Chargers are threw me over.
I knew exactly what you were talking about. and it was for good reason. It was annoying the way he played defense, but that's why the Thunder love him, man.
Yes.
Who is South Carolina still the big dog in the SEC next year?
In the SEC specifically, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But overall,
it's the thing is South Carolina kind of like they were this year. They're going to be really, really good, but they're not going to be unbeatable. They're not what they were 2 years ago with Aliyah Boston or, you know, with Boston and Cardoso. Like, they're not that. So they're very beatable, as we saw UConn beat them by 30 like twice. Like, they can lose games. But I do think they are still the most like overall talented. You know, if you go just 1 through 10, you know, Edwards will be better for them. Kitts will be really good again. And they added Taniah Latson from Florida State, who is very good as well. So they are probably, like, if I was doing a preseason ranking, they're probably still one, but it's not like they were 2 or 3 years ago where they're 35-0. Like, they're going to lose games. And so just like when LSU, you know, played them this year, it was competitive. I expect LSU to be right there with them again this year in the SEC. If we're doing like national picture, the only two that I can say for certain are better than LSU at this point is South Carolina, and then I'm pretty sure UConn is better still. Even
USC?
Losing Paige.
Well, USC.
FUD. They added Sarah Williams, who LSU was in on trying to get. They added that Sarah Williams addition is going to be big for them. You know, the KK Arnold and so on, and they're just always going to have good players there. So I think UConn will still be very good. So that's kind of where I'm at. But after that, I mean, LSU versus UCLA, Texas, like I think LSU is right there in that, you know, 3 to 5 range of the country. I think they're going to be really competitive.
Yeah. Man, I'm so ready for my mom to call me later, like, because she freaking adores because of the TikTok dances and stuff like that.
Yeah.
but yeah, I did not think Jalen Williams was going to get a stray on here tonight. Like, what if he was tuning in before his big game? Like, damn. Like, this is random.
Tip off in 24 minutes.
I'm sure he showed Shay before the game. Like, do you see this guy?
Right. Dude, I had a whole bit. I had a whole thing where it was like the charge of the day. And I would just find, because I would just be watching games, because I do the Dave Campbell's Texas Basketball Podcast too. So I'm over here watching like Rice and Tarleton State or something. And you get these refs out here that are just, you know, they just showed up. And you got to do like falling sideways. And they're like, yep, other way. And I'm like, yeah, this is amazing. But then college basketball, to their credit, on the men's side at least, to their credit, they fixed it. And they do not call nearly as many charges. And it has done so much for the game. Now, the women's side, I don't know what is taking women's referees so long, or if they have a different governing body or something. But those charges are still terrible on the women's side. They need to fix that. But the men's side has fixed it. So I'm a little sad that I can't do my bit anymore of just tweeting out charges and getting a bunch of likes off of it. That was the cheat code for me. I loved it because I was actually mad.
One thing I will say with like women's basketball now, because so much focus has been on football and the powers that be just can't hoard talent anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know if Dawn Staley will ever have like a South Carolina team that she had. I mean, I don't think people realize how freaking good they were. Like, they just did not lose games.
No.
They never played close games. They were never freaking close.
Yeah.
And like now I just think it's going. I mean, I know UConn blew everyone out here. But
they were a 2 seed. I mean,
right.
It's like, and it didn't, like, they weren't like a, obviously everybody knew they were good. Like, I picked them to win the championship in my bracket, so it wasn't a surprise. But like, there were times in the year where it was like UConn just kind of was like going through the, you know, ups and downs and stuff like that with the portal in every sport, obviously. But like, women's basketball, I think, is another one, kind of like football, where, you know, the top teams are still the top teams, but there's not as much continuity at times. And you know, there's just a little bit more turnover than the coaches would like, and those older coaches are trying to figure it out still. So we're in like kind of a gray area right now where those teams try to, you know, get their footing. So yeah, unless if another Leah Boston comes in where they, and that it was really that whole class for South Carolina where they all stayed together for like 5 years and
they're unreal
together. And it was like, okay, what are we doing here? So we'll see. But yeah, I do think the transfer portal has opened up for kind of a more balance that at least like in the top 5, 6, 7.
I will say, I was lucky and you were at this game as well. Caitlin Clark beating that South Carolina team. Yes. That is the best basketball performance I've ever seen live in person, men's or women's at any level.
That was unbelievable.
Like the shit that she was seeing out there was just insane. Like I had never seen anything like it. And I'm so glad that we did not have to play South Carolina in that final. We match up so well versus Iowa. And obviously we might have been able to beat South Carolina still, but I don't know, dude.
That matchup was so bad that year with Boston and Cardoso. And
yes.
But Iowa just sat in the paint, and let Raven Johnson shoot threes, and Caitlin Clark came down bombing away. And that was an experience right there. That was we had known about Caitlin Clark, but that was like the real, real introduction to be like, oh, this is a superstar, like right here. Like we'd seen like all the long shots and everything, but at that time it was kind of just a legend. And then you see it in person, you're like, oh, she just took down South Carolina. Okay.
But literally, like just after the game, it was just crazy how many people were just waiting on her. I let the young kids say it was the aura. I'd never seen anything like that. And then Angel took care of business. And I was very happy that she did. Well, Angel and Jasmine Carson and everyone. But I wanted to ask you that before you left. You're famously known for calling the Jasmine Carson shot. So for those that don't know, you were on the court before the game.
Yeah.
And you tweeted out a video of Jasmine Carson shooting threes. Mm-hmm. All right. And for those that don't know, Jasmine Carson barely played.
Yeah, she was very inconsistent.
And then she plays literally the game of her life, like just couldn't miss a shot. So you called it.
It is one of my biggest tweets. That and I think during COVID, I had one where there was a quadruple doink watching a Charlotte, I think it was Rice versus Charlotte, Rice versus somebody. It was a Conference USA game. Cause again, I'm at North Texas and I'm watching every like Conference USA game I can watch. And there was a field goal. It went off boom, 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 boom. And then like Bleacher Report and everybody picked it up and it was like,
okay,
quad doink thing. So that and Jasmine Carson are my two biggest tweets because Jasmine Carson, all I did was take a video of her shooting. I was like, hey, she could have a good game here.
It was so random. I was like, how in the hell? Because she has like a key to the city that she's from and all that. So, I mean, it was such a big story.
Probably because of my tweet, honestly.
I'm giving you credit. That's what I'm saying.
I think so.
You're the only media person that saw it happen. And you said, this is going to be her night.
So many quote tweets and comments being like, did he know? Did he get the script early? Like, how did this work? It was like, Jasmine Carson banks in a three right before half. You're like, okay, that's going to be one of these games. That was a fun, fun, fun experience.
There we go. Make sure you go give him a follow on the twitter.com. Just hit the 5K mark. Matthew Brunet. Yeah.
Brunet. Right. When I moved here, I was like, I should just make
Brunet.
A friend.
Brunet.
I should just make it French. Yeah, it's Bruni, but I should just make it French. Just go all the way Brunei with it. Just like a beignet. Just
go. Yeah, there you go. Well, Matthew, we really appreciate you, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Carter, anytime, man.
All right, buddy. Matthew, superstar. This is the only LSU show that would spend an hour talking basketball at this juncture. But I want you guys to know, I really freaking do care. All right. And I would even go so far to say that the lack of where we need to be in football does not bother me as much as not making the tournament in men's basketball. I know that goes against what you guys know me for is football, football breakdowns. But it is unacceptable in a 68-team tournament to not make the tournament in three seasons. It should never happen at any school. It should not happen, and it's pissing me off, okay? I'm very lucky that at my parents' house, they still have my John Brady basketball camp trophies and stuff. When I was being coached by Brad Bridgewater, LSU basketball's great. So, look, I just want to make the damn tournament. I just do. I don't know any of these transfers. Matthew does. That's why I wanted him on. And he's telling me that we should make it. 14 of the 16 teams made it. We did not make it. That should piss you the hell off. God, it pisses me off. Like, it really pisses me off. But we got Ronald Dupree, LSU legend. He's going to oversee a lot of things for us. That's good. That's good. Bring back some of the legends. But Matt McMahon has got to get it together. And I will defend him tooth and nail that I don't think when he took the job that he thought that the SEC would turn into what it is now in men's basketball. So there you go. I shouldn't have got that riled up. I'm sick. So I've been feeling cruddy all day. But this was the first time I really, because I looked at some of these guys, and before, you know, I knew Matthew was going to come on, I was like, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Texas A&M's got a new coach. I'll end on this. So when you do content and you cover all the teams, you know, there's so many of you that just watch this. Some of you watch Power Hour SEC. Some of you watch Power Hour NFL. We just hit 7,000 subscribers on Power Hour NFL. Okay. When you do this, you really get to see the fan bases that have really been through some shit. Like, the New York Jets have gone through some things. All right. But in all honesty, I don't think anyone comes close to these two programs when it comes to pain. Texas A&M and Arkansas. Okay. Goodness gracious. Because as much as we talked about Betterina, LSU softball being nationally ranked basically in the top 10, top 15, it's unacceptable that we've had what's happened in the postseason. But at least we still have Jay Johnson. We still have Kim Mulkey. We just had Jaden Daniels. We still have Brian Kelly. We've had a bunch of good things happen. Jay Clark. At least we're not Texas A&M. At least we are not them. Because what happened to them versus Liberty in softball this weekend was historic. A one seed had never lost in the regionals. Softball. And it happened with Texas A&M. They just won't ever win anything. It just won't. Could you imagine the A&M meltdown if Schloss wins a title his first year at Texas? Sibley is with me. I he does not believe in Matt McMahon. At least Arkansas and A&M have good track programs. Yeah, there were some balloons. I think if you do this, the balloons come. Yeah, you got to chunk the deuces. That's kind of a random thing. But there you go. All right, y'all. That'll do it for me. I'm so freaking excited about the single elimination format in Hoover. I love it. I love it. I also love the Timberwolves. I hope they win it all. I need this future bet. It's not a life-changing amount of money. I'm not going to be able to move to Vegas or anything like that. But it would be nice. Shout out to our top super chatters tonight, Mr. J Red on the Venmo and Mr. Sibley on the YouTube. I'll end on this. I'm sad that William Tate is leaving. I am very sad. He loved sports. His wife was involved with the heavily involved with the women's basketball program as a mentor. And I think she was kind of like a chaplain, if you will. And William Tate loved athletics. He really did. So I wish him well as he goes to Rutgers. I'm not smart enough to know what a university president does or doesn't do. I do know, though, that there are quite a few university presidents that do not give a rip about sports. They just don't. Because, well, the presidents oversee everything. And there are so many presidents that dig their heels into, well, it's all about, you know, academics, and it should be more about academics, and you know, why are we funding this when, you know, the library's falling? I mean, there's plenty of presidents out there that do that kind of stuff, right? William Tate loves sports. I actually met him, ironically, at the Final Four a few years ago. So, I hate it. I wish he would have stayed longer. And we'll see where LSU goes from there. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight, we are doing some lemon garlic chicken. Let's go.